Hey, movie retrospective. Let's see, what did the patrons choose on the poll this week? Stephen King adaptation from 1984, Children of the Corn.
Yeah, not a bad flick. I remember it. Remember it? We
Outlander.
saw it again, and I was just like, yeah, okay, I remember this shit.
Well, the interesting thing about this movie is that I think I probably saw this. Let's see, shit. It came out in 1984. When I was 12 years old, I don't think I saw it in the theater, but I saw it on cable, like as soon as it came out on cable. So I saw it when I was like a preteen or like an early teenager. And I remember really digging it. I saw it probably like hundreds of times because I think I taped it off cable or whatever and watched it a bunch of times. But then I didn't watch it again for many years and then just recently watched it again. And it's still okay, but. It doesn't, I think it doesn't hold up as well as an adult. I think it's more like it works out better if you're a kid because I think you can relate to the kid characters better.
Well, also it was a movie of its time.
Well, that
So
too.
back in those days, it was a lot more exciting. It's not a bad movie.
It's, yeah, it's not even like one of the worst. I mean, Stephen King kind of has a reputation for some of his like adaptations being bad, but it's like this would be like mid-tier, I
Yeah,
think.
upper mid.
Yeah.
Upper mid, actually. It's not as good as Christine or The Dead Zone, but it's not as bad as Maximum Overdrive and some of that other fucking
Or
crazy or sleep,
sleepwalkers,
yeah, or
or the
fucking
Langoliers.
Langoliers, you're not talking about that, It's kind of akin to watching a good dead mall video. It does show a bunch of older interiors and fucking, you know what I mean, some retro early 1900s, maybe like 1920s, 1930s deserted towns. It has some pretty cool shots of that. It did kind of take me back. And the clothes and had old what's her name when she was a baby. Is
Linda
it
Hamilton.
Linda Hamilton as a baby? Yeah, she wasn't quite a baby.
This came out the same year as Terminator, although I think she might have shot it because I think Terminator came out later in
She
the
looked a
year.
little bit younger
So
in
I'm
this.
assuming that, I mean, she had better hair in this for sure because that was kind of like.
I think I read the book, but I don't recall being that impressed with the
It's a
book.
real short story.
I
It's
think
not
my
even a book.
book's
It's
a
a sh
short
it's a
story,
really
then I
short
must have
story.
read it because I read a lot of his
It
short
was in
stories.
Night Shift.
Yeah, I read that one. So I had Night Shift.
Yeah,
I
I
also had
still
one.
have it.
I did read it. I just didn't remember that much about it. The movie, it's shot in a way that was very familiar to our generation. It's very coherent. There's nothing stylistic about it or anything. It's very point A to point B. It's just a straightforward, almost generic kind of production. But that might be a good thing. You know what I mean? It's
It's TV movie like, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because they made a lot of t good TV movies and a lot of good TV like Stephen King adaptations like Salem's Lot, for example. But
Although Salem's Lot was
you know, there
better.
was nothing like stylistically that like
No
stuck
style.
out
No.
about this movie. It
No.
was very workmanlike. Let's
Exactly. That's a
put
good
that.
way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you know, that kind of holds up over time in a certain way.
Yeah.
Because the movie's very coherent and it's a very linear storytelling.
Well, it's a very
So,
simple
it's very
story. They
simple.
don't really need to do anything fancy with it, even though they changed it a lot from the short story. Because, like I said, the short story, I think, was first published in 1977, I want to say. I think it was in Penthouse or something like that. Because a lot of his early short stories can turn up in skin mags. But then it was like, you know, anthologized later when Night Shift came out. And the story is like super, super short. So obviously, they had to add a bunch of shit like to the movie. And I guess Stephen King wrote the original screenplay for this, but the producer did not like it, which because he's the producer said, "Look, dude, the first 35 pages of your screenplay is just your two protagonists, the couple, like arguing with one another in the car." And it's like when not, and it's funny because the producer, I don't know exactly what he said to Stephen King, but he said like stuff that I've said about Stephen King in the past. It's like, dude, film is a visual medium. Stuff that works in a short story, like, you know, doesn't necessarily work in a filmic kind of, you know, context. So, it's like, yeah, we don't want half an hour of like two people just bickering at one another in the car. So we need like some other way to approach this. So they had to add a bunch of stuff from the story because in the short story, which like I said is only a few pages long,
Yeah.
Maybe 4 pages, if I remember correctly. Basically, all that happened, and this is spoiler alerts, like for a 1977 short story and a 1984 movie, obviously, so don't get upset at me. But, you know, basically in the story, the couple who are named Bert and Vicky, they're actually driving across country to go to marriage counseling or something like that. I don't know why they couldn't find marriage counseling where they lived, but whatever. And they basically can't stand each other. So they're just like arguing and arguing the whole time. But they, you know, they hit a kid. They end up having to go to this little bitty town called Gatlin. And basically all the kids there who have got religion end up killing them. They both die. Which does not happen in the movie. But the interesting thing, too, is that in the short story, it's been a way longer time since the kids killed the adults. I think it's been 12 years. Whereas in the movie, it was only 4 years, or 3 or 4 years. So, like, in the story, they're already on the second generation because they're already having kids. Like, the teenagers were already having kids.
Yeah, and it's kind of like Logan's Run with Carousel. You can't make it to 19 to kill you. They sacrifice you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's essentially...
Which I forgot that element, but yeah.
And that's like from the short story too, because, and like I said, in the short story, since it's been such a long time, the characters of Isaac and Malachi are mentioned, but I don't even think Isaac was born like when, because I think he was a second generation person in the story. So he wasn't even born, like, because in the movie, he's kind of like the mastermind behind the massacre of the adults, but he wasn't even born in the story. And he's not really like a big character in the story either.
I thought they did a good job, though, of representing this individual medium. I mean, they show the little fucking temple, the little churches with the fucking evil fucking Jesus, the corn Jesus.
That corn Jesus is pretty creepy, I gotta
tell
you.
The so-called unholy fucking paintings of fucking gorillas coming out and fucking people. shit the little kids would do, you know. I liked that. I mean, like you said earlier, if a movie is dialogue based, I check out. I think it's a failure of cinema to have that. A movie is actually just glorified comic book strip. And the movies I tended to like started out as a big old storyboard. And that's really, you know, because it's a visual medium. Like a good example. All right. Conan books. They tried to do a real accurate, this is recently I saw a review on it, they tried to do a real accurate illustrated version of a Conan novel. It failed because it's mostly talking, and that makes a really fucking boring comic book. Marvel's version of it, the comic book version of it from the 70s and the 80s is exciting. It was nothing but Conan running around fighting monsters and chopping people's heads off. And that was a very successful comic book. It's a different medium. For me, film and cinema, it's like a comic strip. You got to show a lot of shit. And this movie did that. It did that. It keeps you in the story. There was always constantly something happening. It had suspense. Although it did seem like they were driving around for a long time before they actually got.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how many days has passed? They're still driving? They're still driving around. They still can't get into the town. It seemed like a couple days had passed.
Well, one thing that I had forgotten about, because like I said, I saw this movie a million times when I was a teenager, but I hadn't seen it for probably like at least 20 years. One aspect that I had forgotten about was that in the movie, and this is not from the story, this is a film original. In the movie, it almost seemed like the, you know, he who walks behind the rose was like making it so that they couldn't get out of the town.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was like supernatural or if it was because they made a couple comments like that the signs were like pointing different ways, like Gatlin this way, Gatlin this way, like
yeah,
a mile later.
Rearrange it
so I don't know if the kids rearranged them to keep people away or kept people in there.
Right.
There's like some shit in here that doesn't really make a whole bunch of sense.
Well, there has to be some explanation of how the kids could be in there on their own for such a long time
without anybody checking in on them.
Yeah, wondering what happened to their relatives and stuff. So there had, and then just regular strangers showing up and delivery people and maintenance people and people bringing fuel and people fixing power lines, you know. Eventually they would find out that there was no, even in a pre-internet era, they would find out that the town didn't have any adults in it. So there had to be some kind of I think it was a mixture of both. I think it was, there's supernatural forces, demonic forces were keeping people out. And And also the kids were fucking ordered to do shit like rearrange signs and stuff by this demonic being.
Because I feel like nobody had come through there in, like, all this year. But I kind of, maybe I'm, like, overthinking this, baby. This is, my writer brain. I'm kind of justifying it by saying, well, he who walks behind the rose, every now and then, they need, like, another sacrifice, like, an extra sacrifice of some quote-unquote outlanders. So, at that stage, he'll kind of, like, rearrange shit to make it so that a car will come by and get lost, and they won't be able to get to the next town, which I think was Hemmingford.
Yeah, but even back in those days, missing people, fucking, they would have tracked down where they went missing.
Yeah.
But
it's a movie.
They had a psychic girl that could tell them when people were coming.
Yeah.
So maybe the demonic force that was running the show also knew who they could kill and no questions would be asked.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, but you're reading into it too much.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But that's what I do, though.
Yeah, the thinking of the time, is that it was just a fucking movie and they're telling you a tale. You weren't supposed to read too much into it. And then you're dealing with Stephen King and that motherfucker was on so much coke and drinking so much. Especially
in the 80s.
He was just pulling shit out of his ass, you know. They were good stories, though.
I actually liked this story, and I think when I first saw the movie, I think I saw the movie before I read the story, and then when I read the story, I was, like, really surprised because it's really different. Like I said, the whole dynamic between Bert and Vicky in the short story is completely different. Like, they're already married, they've been married a long time, and they completely loathe each other, and in the movie, they're, like, I don't think they're married yet, and they're, like, real lovey-dovey. I mean, I guess they had to do that to make it so, like, it would be more... you know, emotionally affecting when she gets kidnapped by the killer kids and then gets put up on the fucking, you know, corn crucifix or whatever across from the blue man. In the story, Vicky gets killed and, like, she gets crucified and then they, like, tear her eyeballs out and, like, put fucking corn husks in the eyeballs and everything. And I think he sees it and he's basically like, meh. But then he gets killed too.
Right.
So, by he who walks behind the rose. So, basically, the story, if you haven't seen it, and the weird thing about it is that Children of the Corn, even though it's not, I mean, it's an okay movie, it's not a fantastic movie, but it's funny how ingrained it's become in pop culture, like, even nowadays. Because, I mean, if you see, well, like, I've seen shit on, like, South Park, I've seen shit about, like, where people would be like, Outlander, and, like, everybody knows about, like, fucking Isaac and Malachi and all that kind of shit. And, you know, if you say Children of the Corn, people know exactly what you mean. It's just, like, all these little rube children, like, living out in the middle of Nebraska or wherever. And it's like, you know, you go through the town and they fucking kill all the adults. So everybody knows about that. And did you know, I did not know until today. I knew there had been a sequel, which I think was called The Final Sacrifice, which I think I might have seen because I read the Wikipedia thing and I'm like, that sounds vaguely familiar. So I might have seen that on cable at some point. Do you know there are 10... of these fucking movies. 10 of them.
Yeah.
And actually,
it must be terrible. You never hear of them.
Well, they're not like, there's not like any narrative continuity. It's kind of like a thing where they just kind of take the premise of like the killer kids, like out in the middle of it. And then they kind of like have, you know, kind of standalone stories about people that lived in the town or once lived in the town and left and then came back. And they have shit like that. And also Sci-Fi Channel did a remake of it in 2009, which I had no idea about, which I heard was a little bit closer to the story and it was like passable. It was fine. And I heard that they were doing another remake of it, like that's supposed to be coming out next year. Mm. But I don't know how that's going to go. But like I said, this is basically... The story is there's this little town. 4 years ago, all the kids like got religion. Isaac was the main guy, played by John Franklin, who he's great in this. But the thing about it is that he's supposed to be a kid, and he kind of looks like a kid. But when he shot this, I think he was 25. But he had some kind of growth hormone, like an illness that made him childlike. Hmm. So I think that was one of the reasons they wanted him in the movie, because there's something kind of like unsettling about him, I guess, because he's like an adult but he's like a kid at the same time. But that's why, because he had that kind of like a malady. He also turned up in one of the sequels, maybe the fifth or the sixth one, which I think was Isaac's Return or Isaac's Revenge or something like that, but he wasn't in some of the other ones. And I think he actually like maybe had written the screenplay for that or co-written the screenplay. But so basically he's like the mastermind. Malachi is kind of like his muscle, I guess. It's like he's his second in command, the one that goes out and does all the dirty work. Whereas Isaac is kind of the one that it's like, you know, he who walks behind the rose and he talks to me and he tells me what to do and shit. So they've basically got this weird pagan corn-based religion, which is some kind of demon apparently telling them it's a folk religion, like a harvest kind of, we need like to, you know, put blood in the earth and then it makes the corn grow. And that's what they use everything for. Like they use the corn for everything. So it's kind of like this weird kind of pagan kind of shit that they're doing. But the thing about it though, is like, you can tell that the movie and the short story to an extent also, they're kind of talking about like, you know, the dangers of like fundamentalist religion and everything like that. But you kind of undermine your message a little bit because he who walks behind the rose in the movie is real. I mean, you see him at the end. It looks terrible. It's a terrible special effect, even for the time. But it's like, so it's kind of hard to be like, hey, you kids are so dumb. It's like with this dumb religion, but about, well, the demon's real though. I mean, it's working.
But I also detected what it was, is that you're kind of dumb if you listen to fucking mysterious demonic forces out in a damn
That's
corn.
True. Yeah. You could.
You're dumb if you listen
way.
To some shit like that. Because remember, some shit had happened in the movie before they got there. The Mr. Coppice man, what did he call him? Ossifer, what's his name? The cop.
Yeah, the kid called him Ossifer.
Yeah, the cop figured out what the hell was going on and was trying to use a religious rite out of the Bible to destroy the demon, but he got killed. He got killed before he was able to complete it. So some people had tried to prevent it beforehand or were onto it. So these people showing up in the town weren't the first ones that tried to combat this thing, which I kind of liked that element.
Yeah, because
was a hero before who had fallen and you don't know anything about him. He was the cop.
Yeah.
The cop tried to stop it.
And then they ended up crucifying him and sacrificing him. Yeah. So, because he's still there. Because when Vicky gets crucified, he gets like... But the thing about it is that they call him, even though Job, one of the main kid characters, who was not in the story, they added Job and Sarah, those two kid characters, just so you could have a perspective on the town, like before Bert and Vicky got there. You know what I mean? So they wanted somebody that already lived there that was like rebelling against the shit so they could have somebody to work together with the protagonist. So it's like, it's weird that he knew the officer's name. I can't remember what the officer's name was. Officer Hawkins or something like that.
Yeah.
But it made more sense in the story because in the movie they called him the Blue Man. But it made more sense in the story for them to call him the Blue Man because they wouldn't have known that that was a cop because some of them were so young that they didn't remember like who that was or what that uniform was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because they'd just grown up there. Yeah. So the fact that like... So I think that was kind of a plot hole that they maybe should have carried over, but maybe in the movie they thought, well, 12 years, like that's a really long time and like for nobody to notice that like these kids are running around amok.
Stephen King, if you read all his works, he's not anti-religion or anti-supernatural. Supernatural shit happens all the time in his books and it's real. What he was talking about in the story and then what he talks about in a lot of stories is that you shouldn't listen to fucking demonic and false type gods. They're real, but they're bad.
Yeah.
And so the movie kind of holds true to kind of like the entirety of... I don't remember the short story that well. I remember I remember that I read it.
Yeah.
I don't remember many details about it. But it goes along a Stephen King type theme, which is in a way a lot like Lovecraft. Because he was... You know, Lovecraft would say the same thing. Like, oh yeah, you're dumb for following an evil god.
Yeah.
Evil gods exist.
Yeah.
They fuck you over. Because remember the hero of the story, the protagonist, he said, he was like, you guys should know better. You killed your own parents and you're following this evil thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, so that message is put out there.
Yeah, he's not, because I feel like Stephen King...
He's not saying that this is a false religion. He said this is a real religion.
He does actually, like, a lot of his short stories do kind of, like, take pokes at, like, fundamentalist religion, for real. But I do think that I mean, from everything I know, he is a Christian, so he's not, like, so much shitting on religion as a whole.
Yeah, no.
Fundamentalism.
From what I remember, the protagonist basically said, he said you shouldn't be following false religions. The real religion has compassion and
any religion without love and compassion
is not a real religion.
It's not a real
but
religion.
He wasn't saying that the demon wasn't real.
Yeah.
That the demon had given them a false religion. That's that was and that kind of lines up more with the thinking of the time. And then the thinking of Stephen King, you know, when you read a lot of his books.
I always wonder if, because he's real in this story as well, because they do kind of show him. I don't think he describes him like super, you know, I don't remember him describing him like really in detail or anything other than having like really big red eyes and shit. In this, they kind of make him look like a mushroom cloudy type thing, yeah. Like just like a cloud. And like I said, this... The special effects in this are just so bad, which is kind of a shame. But now I'm kind of like interested to know if the story would have been more interesting if you didn't know if the demon was real or not, or if these kids were just
not a bit. It's more interesting to know that it was real.
To know that it was real.
I think like, so. That it was a real monster and it was really doing shit.
Yeah, because I mean, basically, like at the end of the movie, because like I said, this movie actually has a happy ending, unlike the story, which has a terribly, horribly bleak ending. Yeah. But, you know, in the movie, both of them live, and the two kids who are not even in the story, they are basically implying that they're going to adopt these two kids. Like, they're like, yay, we're going to be one big happy family. We're going to take you out of this, like, shithole town or whatever.
Yeah, at the time, you had to have a happy ending at the time.
Yeah, because I feel like the story, like I said, they both died. She got killed. Vicky got killed. He was just like, meh, good riddance. But then he got killed, too. But he who walks behind the rose killed Bert. And at the end of the story... he who walks behind the rose was pissed because he had to like get off his like fat demon ass and kill Bert himself instead of the kids doing it because they whiffed it. So he who walks behind the rose told whoever, I think Amos or whoever the fucking prophet was in the story, that it's like, okay, well now I used to sacrifice all you bitches at 19. Now it's 18. You know what I mean? Yeah. Now the only rebel in the story, and she appears in the movie too, but not in a huge role, was the pregnant girl.
Yeah.
She was actually, she didn't do anything in the story, but at the end of the story, she was pregnant and she was looking out saying, you know, maybe I should burn this fucking cornfield down.
As I was watching it again and they showed the inside of the church and the way they had it all arranged, man, my stomach's growling.
Now we're getting hungry.
As I was watching it, I was like, man, this is a Lovecraftian message. This is basically very similar to like the cult of Dagon.
Yeah, yeah.
Dagon was a real god. He was a sea god. Yeah. He was evil. This is the corn god. He was a real god.
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing.
And they had a cult and they were doing the same. They were sacrificing. It was a Lovecraftian type of message. And that goes in line with, you know, with King. King read, he knew everything.
He was
Lovecraft.
A big Lovecraft fan, yeah.
And that was the angle he approached religion. You know, if you look at, like, the entirety of what, at least of what I remember of Stephen King's work, like, you know, The Talisman and, you know, and The Shining, King believed that if you believed in the religion and it was a good religion, then it would work. Like, your faith in it would say, like, protect you against a vampire.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be Christianity. It just had to be
as long as you believed in it
and it was good.
Yeah.
Then you could, and you had the faith in it, then it would work. And that's
Which is really the only kind of religion I can get behind.
Yeah. Well, and in the story, you know, he was saying that fundamentalism in any religion, including these cults, is all dangerous.
Yeah, it's bad.
Right. It's more about your inner connection with the universal God. That's what.
And just be cool to everybody, man.
It's about compassion and doing the right thing and, you know, not doing useless shit like human sacrifice. You know, that's what King believed in, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Which, like I said, that's totally a message I can get behind. But yeah, like I said, so this movie, as I said, it's obviously not up there with Dead Zone or The Shining or Misery or like any of the, or even like Green Mile or anything like that. This I would put in mid-tier. Like Stephen King adaptations, not like I said, not as terrible as some of the other ones that they made.
Yeah, it's not the first one you go to, but like after you've seen the good ones, you move on to this one. It's just more of it.
And
the quality, the art, it's not as artistic.
Yeah.
They did do a good job inside, like the special effects for, say, like the church and certain, you know, it was kind of creepy with the crucifixion.
Yeah.
The acting, it was effective, but like you said earlier, it was workmanlike.
Yeah, and I will say the acting in this is a little uneven.
It's acting of the time.
Even Linda Hamilton was a little not bad, but just like not, I didn't really get a sense of her character. She didn't really have a lot to work with. I do feel like the relationship with her and Bert was okay. Bert was pissing me off because, so they hit the kid with the car, you know, the kid that's trying to escape. And that's also what happened in the story. Like, he gets his throat cut, they throw him in the road, and then they hit the kid. And Bert is just fucking bound and determined to, like, find some place to go to, like, report the death and everything, which, okay, good, but... If I drive into a town in the middle of fucking Nebraska and there's nobody around, like no cars or anything like that, and then I just see a bunch of kids trying to steal my car, I'm getting the fuck out of that town. Yeah. I'm not hanging around looking for another house. So it's like Linda Hamilton's character, Vicky, is just like, can we leave now, please? And I'm just like, please listen to her. And yeah. He's just like, oh, it's a little weird around here, but nothing to be alarmed about, like 5 minutes before she gets kidnapped.
He didn't have much street wisdom.
He really did, because I was like, This is more than a little weird, dude.
Wrapping corn around his car and shit, and he goes, like, well, just weird shit they do.
Yeah, it's just some weird shit they do. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's a little more than weird shit.
I'm out of here. I'll call the
bye,
cops in the next town.
Bye. Yeah, it's like, let's try. I'd walk to the next town if I had to. Fuck this shit. Like I said, he didn't see any horror movies. But so I can get that. Like, I will say the interesting thing about the two little kids who played Job and Sarah, who, like I said, were not... They did had no equivalents in the story, really. They were just there as kind of like the audience, you know, go to like into the town, so you could see what was going on in the town before the main protagonist got there.
I think that might have been an attempt by the director to kind of what's the word, not to totally cast aspersions on every child in the town. That some children were good. I think that's what that attempt was.
Yeah, because those two kids were like wise to from the beginning. They're just like, fuck this. I don't want it to be a condemnation of children.
I think.
Yeah, they didn't want to make it so like all the kids
all
were terrible.
All children will fucking kill your kids. So they will kill their parents and stuff. I think that, but you know, in a book, that's more effective.
Yeah.
It's more effective that, no, it got them all. It got all the kids.
Yeah. Well, like I said, even in the story, like, there was a one kid, particularly that one girl that was pregnant, but she was like young. She was only 14,
15.
Yeah,
you don't want to piss off the parents, though, and the people that have children in the audience.
Yeah.
Because they're like, my kid wouldn't do that. My kid would be like these good kids. They had a boy and a girl in there. See,
That's one of each.
Yeah, the other ones, they were bad kids. So I know the thinking of the time.
Yeah.
They're trying to sell the movie. They're trying to make the movie appeal to a widest audience possible. And that's how you do it. That's how you get out of that conundrum.
Yeah.
You know.
But yeah, so like I said, so it was kind of a win-win. But I will say that it's I'm not sure if they shot this in sequence, but it seems like the two kids, their acting was kind of, they were real annoying at the beginning, I have to say. Like, especially the one scene where they were talking to the one kid, what the hell was the one kid that escaped? Or was trying to escape, like, through the cornfield and then got hit by Bert and Vicky's car. Which was actually, like, a really... I had forgotten how graphic that scene was, like, with that kid getting hit with the car. It was just like, wow, that looks really real. It was a little upsetting. But, so, the scene with them, like, when they're talking to him and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna get the fuck out of here, and he's got his little suitcase or whatever. Because I think he's gonna turn 18 or 19 soon and he doesn't want to sacrifice himself like you're supposed to. So, I did like Danny in The Shining. Yeah. But that scene is like seemed very awkward to me, because I think the thing about it is that the thing about the tone of this, particularly in the beginning, I think the kid's acting got better like as the time went on. You know what I'm saying? Like as the movie went on. So that's why I'm saying I don't know if they shot it in sequence or not, because the kid got that, especially the boy, like got better at the end. That kid was in fucking Monster Squad too, I think, like later on. But so it was almost kind of like the tone of it was almost like those kids, I'm not going to say they thought they were in a comedy, but it's almost like the tone of their performance like could have turned into a comedy at any moment. Do you get what I'm saying?
You mean towards the end?
Well, toward the beginning.
Towards the beginning? Okay.
And they seemed a little...
At the end, there was comedy. I mean, the kid was trying to help and the fucking
But I liked
is,
that,
though. Dude was going, get out of here! And he's like, well...
Excuse me.
And the kid helped him, you know.
Excuse me for helping your stupid ass.
I think that was another thing that the director wanted to do. He wanted to show that the good kids actually were kind of being heroic and helping to fight the demon.
Yeah, because they had to live in the shit. They saw all the people get killed.
I kind of, for a movie, for a mainstream movie, where you're trying to make money at the box office... I kind of agree with that decision.
I liked the kids more toward the end when they were like, you know, heroing up, you know.
And then you're kind of going, taking it back to the success of Poltergeist, because the kids were helping out to fight the Poltergeist to get the little girl back and stuff, you know. So that I think they tried to go that way, which, yeah, that's how I would.
I liked that. Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, what I was talking about, not so much the end, because like I said, I thought they got better toward the end. But almost at the beginning, I think something that bugs me, like, it didn't bug me back then, but I think it bugs me now, is I didn't like the kids' narration at the beginning. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that they needed that. I mean, I think that you could kind of see what was going on and you didn't really need. I mean, maybe they were afraid that the audience wasn't going to be on board with it and they were just kind of like, well, we need this kid like narrating like what happened. But I don't think it needed it.
Probably not, no.
You know what I'm saying? Like narration.
That's things that could be fixed at edit.
Yeah. You know? So I could have done without that. But like other than that, okay,
for all we
fine.
Know, there's different cuts of this movie.
Not that I ever heard, but I mean, this is the only cut I've ever seen.
It needs a digital remaster, if you ask me.
Yeah, it doesn't look all that
good. It looks a little faded and old now.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's gotten like the treatment. Well, at least the version we watched.
Right.
We watched the version which is on Tubi. And so I don't know if that's like the most recent like upgrade or whatever, but I do feel like, I mean, this is like apparently a popular franchise because like I said, they made 10 of these fucking movies plus like two remakes, you know, one in 2009 and one that they're apparently working on or is slated for next year. I will say too, the guy that plays, that played Malachi, Courtney Gaines, he like wildly overacts in this, but I think that that is one of the most appealing things about the movie. Like him and Isaac are just like so over the top that I think that's why if they hadn't been like that, I think maybe this movie would have been like forgotten.
Yeah.
Also shout out because Courtney Gaines, that actor, was also in The Burbs.
Yeah.
Like he played like one of the weird like Klopek family or whatever. We reviewed that one about a while back too.
I detected for me that the tone of the movie, they were trying to give you as much bang for your buck as possible with a pretty limited budget and there's not very many, but not much special effects in the movie.
Yeah.
So they're just trying to make the movie stand out and they're trying to make the movie exciting and scary just but with the actors alone. So I think probably I'd agree with the director's fucking, you know, direction with that.
Yeah.
To do that. Like you said, the movie would have been forgotten without it.
Yeah. I do feel like it needed some of that.
It needed some pop. So that's how they were gonna make it pop.
I mean, like
make it pop with the acting.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, Isaac I think is the best thing about it.
It is over the top, but hey, it's the tone of the movie and the movie's been remembered.
That's true. Like I said, it really like seeped into the public consciousness. Even people that people that haven't seen the movie or sat through the movie, if you say Children of the Corn, everybody knows exactly what you mean, which that's something.
I recommend the movie if you've never seen it. It's a very easy watch. It's not demanding on you. It doesn't have some kind of fucking sophisticated edit or it's not real artistic. You can just watch the movie. It's very easy to follow. It is entertaining. You wonder what the hell's going to happen next. You don't really get bored with it. So, for the amount of money they spent on the movie, yeah, they did a good job.
They did, yeah. I don't even think they spent $1 million on this, if I'm remembering correctly. I can't even remember.
Yeah, but like it's incredible production.
I mean, the gore effects, particularly the practical effects, like the kid getting hit by the car and shit like that, that looks really good.
Yeah.
The only effects that are not good are the one, like, he who walks behind the rose at the end. It's, like, really, really bad, like, early digital effects.
Yeah, the
effects.
Explosions, and it's, like, cartoonish stuff. But, hey, you know what? That was just the way it was in those days.
And I think that the cheesiness, like, adds to its appeal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I can see why it's been remembered kind of fondly.
It's
like
a movie.
Over the years.
It's a movie and it's doing what movies did back then. It's not trying to fool you into like a feeling where you're observing reality. It's not like that. It's like it's a theatrical production in form of cinema.
Cinema. Yeah. What's that you say that's like it sure was a movie, or what was that quote that you had that
never,
I said
man,
they should
just say whatever
they
comes
should just
my
put
mouth.
On that I just put on the fucking front of every
well, it's,
Blu-ray
it is
cover.
A movie. It is a movie.
It's a movie.
It is a movie. Well, there's a difference between flicks and movies and, you know, cinema and, you know, shit. You know, also some of it's just shit. You know, it's not shit. It's good.
Yeah, and it's a fun watch if you're
just,
into, like,
yeah.
80s movies, if you're into, and like I said, it's kind of in the middle of the Stephen King adaptations.
Yeah.
Not as good as some of the ones I like, you know, not even as good as Christine, which I actually think is really
not
underrated.
Not even as good as Firestarter, which I like Firestarter.
I like Firestarter as well. We need to review that one of these.
Yeah.
We haven't done Firestarter
Firestarter, The Dead Zone.
We did Dead Zone, we did Christine.
Shining. I liked the made for TV Shining. A lot of people didn't like it. I liked it.
I didn't like it.
Well, that's on you. I gotta go, man. I'm fucking starving.
I know his little tummy's growling.
Yeah,
all right. So yeah, Children of the Corn from 1984. It's actually on Tubi right now for free if you want to watch it. I think one of the later sequels, Children of the Corn Genesis or something like, which is like the fucking eighth or ninth one or whatever. I think that's on there as well. I haven't watched it. I'm sure it's probably not that good, but if you're really into probably it, terrible. You can like watch yeah. it. I was going to watch it today, but then I was just like, nah, never mind. I got better
You'd
things
probably
to
be
do.
Disappointed.
I got better things to do. Yeah. But yeah, so you can check it out by all means. And that'll do it for this review of Children of the Corn. We will see you next time. Bye.